My name is Scooter, welcoming you to the Inner Side Radio program produced at KPFT Pacifica Radio on America's Slippery Coast. We'll be speaking to Jeffrey Blankford about pirates of the Middle East after this.
You are a pirate.
Your heart in a being a pirate is a wretched thing. Do what you want, because a pirate is free. You are a pirate.
You are a pirate.
Hey, I'm Dan Aykroyd, and I listen to Inner Side Radio with Scooter, because you know why? It don't suck.
We're here at Ground Zero in the Gulf of Mexico, site of the most recent attack on America by the hazmat BP Jihad terrorist organization. We're on board the sea skimmer with the cleanup crew and... Uh-oh! Cleanup crew has been attacked and killed by Israeli commandos. It's a good thing they're undocumented. I'm here with hazmat BP Jihad terrorist Ali Tony Muhammad Hayward. Mr. Hayward, why do you hate America?
You're infidel! We will kill you! We will baste you in your own oil and serve you on grape leaves at Ali Tony Muhammad Hayward,
Middle Eastern Deli on the corner of Westheimer and Taft, open 24 hours. What is that? It looks like Israeli commandos are attacking again. Israeli commandos have attacked and killed Ali Tony Muhammad Hayward, leader of the hazmat BP Jihad terrorist organization, right here at Ground Zero in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. No problem. There's plenty more where he came from. For background on the terrorist attack in the Gulf of Mexico, we go now to the headquarters of the Federal Mineral Management Services at the Chelsea Hotel, where a special meeting is taking place right now.
Oh, yeah, big boy. Drill, baby, drill.
Wait a minute. Let me put on this blowout protector.
You don't need that thing. Don't worry about it.
Israeli commandos have just machine-gunned the Federal Mineral Management Services at the Chelsea Hotel, killing everyone. Let's head back to the Gulf of Mexico, where President Obama is meeting with the terrorist hazmat BP Jihad and members of the Israeli government. Well, this should be good.
Get your hands off my Obama, you terrorist!
That's BP's bitch, and who are you calling a terrorist?
Now calm down. No.
That's my bitch.
We can work this out.
He's my bitch.
I'll appoint a bipartisan commission to study this thing, and when we move on to a consensus, I'll give a speech, and we'll move forward.
Shut up, bitch. That's my bitch.
That's BP's bitch. That's
my bitch.
That's
Obama is my bitch.
That is BP's bitch.
Uh-oh. It looks like Israeli terrorists have attacked and killed the Israelis. Oh man, that's weird. And they have just shot themselves in the foot. Mr. President, are you all right? I suppose so. I just don't have anyone left to tell me what to do. Do you know anybody at Exxon? Joining us this evening is someone who has managed to avoid being attacked by Israeli commandos so far. Jeffrey Blankford has been covering the Middle East with a focus on Israel for, 30 years? About 30 years, is it?
Well, 40.
40 years. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey Blankford. We didn't really talk about what we were going to talk about because I didn't think we had to.
Well, actually, it's a tough act to follow. yes, it is.
I should point out that you are a broadcaster, KZYX, in Mendocino. And you have a weekly show. I was out there meeting some of your friends.
Yes, and I missed you when you were out here, and sorry I did. But our good friend Mariah.
Yeah, we just hung out with Mariah. That was good.
Who did the honors, although she understood you couldn't speak for a while, but that's another story.
That's a good one.
Yes. In any case, actually, an Israeli, not a commander, but an Israeli foot soldier did actually try to do me in about 1983. The bull just creased my hair.
I heard about that.
And I haven't returned the shot yet. anyway, I guess you might want to talk about, speaking of shooting themselves in the foot, besides killing nine people cold blood, the Israelis on the high seas. It was an act of piracy. Israel claims they have an international blockade, but there's no state they're blockading.
Right, they're blockading themselves.
Well, technically, they're still the UN considers them to be an occupying force in Gaza, and Israel claims international blockade, and they haul out all the international maritime law, actually the Helsinki maritime law, which claims that they can board any ship that attempts to penetrate the blockade. I found this Marty Peretz of the New Republic, who is one of the Israel firsters who dominate the media, kindly included the link to the Helsinki Maritime Accords in his article yesterday. And so I went to them and found out one article he didn't mention, that any ship bringing humanitarian aid cannot be stopped by a blockade. That trumps all the nonsense the Israelis have been telling you. As a matter of fact, the irony is, here is this the fifth largest army in the world attacking ship that has civilians on it who do not have what are considered lethal weapons. And lo and behold, the Israelis become the victims.
So people say that they've really shot themselves in the foot this time. What is your take on it?
Actually, I'm pretty much of a pessimist, but there's accumulation of three things. First of all, the attack on Gaza, Operation Cast Lead, which was witnessed thanks to Al Jazeera and Press TV, but particularly Al Jazeera, by people all around the world, was dismissed by the Israelis, but there was no way for people not to be able to see, outside the United States, of course, the cruelty and the brutality of the Israeli bombardment, particularly the use of white phosphorus, which you could see exploding on the street. And then you see the pictures of Israelis sitting in deck chairs on the other side of the Gaza border watching the spectacle as if it was the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And then 94% of the Israelis, polls taken, showed that the Israelis public, by and large, supported the bombardment. That actually caused a major breach with Israel's longtime ally, Turkey, and America's longtime ally, Turkey, in which caused the Prime Minister of Turkey, Erdogan, sitting next to Shimon Peres, to tell Peres on a program that he was a murderer and that Israel was a country of serial murderers, and left the stage. And since that time, the Turkish relationship with Israel, which was very strong commercially, militarily, and so on, has deteriorated. Then we have the assassination by Israeli agents to assassinate a Hamas leader in Dubai, which was captured by closed-circuit television from the time the Israeli agents left their various the airport and arrived at various hotels, and they had secret cameras all over, which the Dubai police were able to put together. Then you had that happening, another disregard of international law. And finally, this particular situation in which the government of Turkey supported this charity, which the Israelis accused of being connected to Al-Qaeda, and later said it wasn't, but you haven't heard their retraction, and being composed of terrorist groups, and call these people terrorists. But Turkey was supporting this particular institution, this particular charity, and they had 600 people aboard, plus tons, they're reporting 10,000 tons of construction material, which Israel has refused to let in. And what happened is when the Israelis came aboard ship, the Israelis claimed all they had was paintball guns. But other witnesses said they had paintball guns plus the regular rifles. Unlike the Americans, who have made a kind of a religion of nonviolence, the Turks hadn't been informed of that, and they fought back. Not only that they fought back, they didn't have any guns. They made some makeshift weapons out of sticks and some bars, but they disarmed two Israelis, got their pistols, and started firing at them, and threw some Israelis, including a commander, from the top deck to the lower deck, which I saw many times on TV,
right,
on my computer. This was incredible. This is a courageous resistance on the part of these nine people who died and those who were wounded. And if they had not done that, if they had willingly allowed themselves to be, let's say, go limp and be dragged onto boats and be taken to Israel, the headlines in the newspapers would not be about this flotilla. It was that resistance and Israel's attack on them that made this international headline and the international incident that it's become, and it may be the game changer. It has put the U.S. in a very difficult position because Turkey happens to be a NATO country. And if Israel should attack NATO, Turkey for any reason, all the other countries of NATO, including the United States, are obligated to come to Turkey's defense.
Well, was the vessel registered in Turkey? Was it a Turkish
yes.
vessel? Okay.
It was carrying a Turkish flag.
Wow.
It was a Turkish vessel. The Turkish flag's all over it. And it's very difficult now. The military in Turkey has been very close to Israel. The military in Turkey has been close to the United States there. And they have a military coup against the Erdogan government has been suppressed. The Erdogan government is Islamic. It's a Muslim country, but they're not any way fundamentalist, let's say, like Iran.
Well, they're very secular. They're real serious
they're
about
really
being
secular.
Right.
But the point is that the Turkish, what they call the Turkish street, the Turks are adamant in their antagonism toward Israel, and it would be very difficult for any politician to make nice with Israel after nine of their citizens, actually eight Turks and one young American man of Turkish parents, born in America, 19 years old. He was found, his body was returned with four bullet holes in the head, which means he was executed
right, by
the Israelis. So there's a great deal of rage, not only in Turkey, in Indonesia, a great American ally. Hundreds of thousands of people were in the streets protesting against Israel.
Well, now the Turks and the Israelis have had an uneasy but working relationship diplomatically, in recent history.
Well, yes, Israel has cultivated non-Arab Muslim countries or peoples like Turkey, Iran, and the Kurds. They lost Iran with Khomeini, although the Iranian talk has been much greater than its bite.
Right, right. And they have a strange relationship with Iran. That's a good reading, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, they always have these Jerusalem Day ceremonies in Tehran in which they claim death to Israel, death to the great Satan and the small Satan, the Saturn.
Yeah, and then they get together on the weekend.
Yeah. Right. So their relationship is very strange, although at the moment I don't think it's there's something going on behind the scenes.
So now the Israelis, besides having this public relations disaster on their hand, have really ticked off the Turks, which is historically is not a good idea. Where do you see that going?
Well, the problem is that the United States, what Israel's done is put the Obama administration in a bind, because whereas Israel or its supporters claim Israel is an asset, strategic asset, and in fact has been more of a liability. Even the head of Mossad just said that the other day. Turkey has been actually a real asset for the United States. So the Cold War and afterward, It is a the U.S. has used its base for even now for Iraq and the war in Iraq, and it has been a key player for the United States through the years. And so now you have the Turks upset with the United States because it was the Obama administration's representatives at the UN who watered down a resolution that would have condemned Israel unequivocally for its attack on the Marmara ship. And the New York Times yesterday reported that the Turkish minister is very unhappy, who met with Hillary Clinton, is very unhappy with the United States for doing that. And so, on the other hand, you have the entire Jewish establishment going to war for Israel here. Yesterday, they sent their representative in the White House, Joe Biden, to be on the Charlie Rose show, in which he gave Israel his unequivocal endorsement. But then he's been doing Israel's work for years. We have a program on Delaware one day. Delaware has as many people as San Francisco, but has two senators. Tell you something about that.
Right.
In any case, then today, they had the editor of the Jerusalem Post make a conference call to AIPAC, which was opened up to congressional staff members, and which I happened to listen to in tape, and in which the editor of the Jerusalem Post gave Israel's position, but was somewhat critical of the way it was handled. And then the next hour after that, they had Deputy Foreign Minister Daniel Ayalon make a conference call to John Hagee, the Christian Zionist leader, and to Christian Zionists for United for Israel, an hour conference call with them. So they are pulling out all stops to do damage control for Israel, and they really need to do it because this is the worst position that Israel has been in globally in terms of public relations that I could ever remember.
Right. And it's fair to point out, too, that when we're talking about Turkey, that their treatment of the Kurdish population is somewhat analogous to the Palestinians' treatment by the Israelis. It's pretty bad.
Oh, right. 30,000 people have died in the war between the attacks by Turkey on the Turkish Kurds. It's been rescinded now, but for a long time you couldn't have a Kurdish name, nor could you speak the Kurdish language.
Right.
That has improved, but I don't know to what extent. So for the United States, there are the good Kurds, who are the Kurds who are on our side, Israel's side, in northern Iraq, what's called Kurdistan.
Yeah.
And then you have the bad Kurds, who want part of Kurdistan to be in Turkey. And the U.S. has played a... it's another problem politically for the United States. What the U.S. is afraid is that the Kurds in Kurdistan declare themselves an independent state, that Turkey will move on them.
Sure.
So this is what the Iraq War has done. And the Iraq War, of course, was fomented, pushed, orchestrated by a handful of mostly Jewish neocons, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, and Scooter Libby, all who claimed credit for it when they thought the thing was going good. But now everything seems to be unwinding for the United States and the region.
And even before the Iraq War, I think Turkey was, what, number one or number two as far as money received from the United States?
No, Israel and Egypt.
Is it
because of the Camp David deal?
Okay.
Then Colombia.
And then Colombia, and then Turkey.
Then Turkey was just in there.
We just love giving money to all these wonderful people.
Actually, I think Turkey's less. Turkey, interestingly enough, because of the way they do business, did not get involved in the international banking fiasco that's brought down the United States and much of Europe.
Okay.
So the Turkish economy is actually flourishing. Turkey is very healthy today.
Interesting.
And this is something, I mean, most Americans have no idea about Turkey. I mean, for them, it's they think of movies and Turks with mustaches and wild swords riding off in the desert.
Ottomans.
Yeah. And but Turkey now is making a major move to be the big player in the Middle East.
Interesting.
They are the ones who will deal with Iran, and the United States can't stop that. They deal with Syria. And also, just recently, with Lula da Silva, the president of Brazil, they negotiated a deal with Ahmadinejad in Iran, which would, if the United States and Israel weren't adamant against it, would take care of what they say is Iran's nuclear weapons program.
Right.
And so the United States and Israel are a little concerned about Turkey's emergence in that area, and the United States is being further isolated by being the only country in the world, other than Canada, which is occupied by the Israel lobby there, like ours, Washington is here, the only country, major country in the world, that has not condemned Israel for its assault on June 1st.
It seems most countries have been condemning all the attacks, you know, from Gaza and
right now
this one is pretty blatant, though. How do you talk your way out of this one? You know
that the Germans, the French, the British, there's no way that this attack could not be condemned, and particularly when Israel not only is not apologetic, Israel pretends that their soldiers were attacked by these quote unquote demonstrators who were armed with knives and
wrist
steel
rockets.
Bars,
yeah.
And had the audacity to grab our soldiers and take their weapons from them, and even throw this commander over the side, which I love. They should have thrown a whole lot of them over the side. But what these Turks did was one day will go down, perhaps, and I hope, as the event that changed the face of the Middle East.
And the way that Turkey blends into this whole thing, because they're all of Europe's economic ties are with Turkey. I mean, Israel doesn't have much of an economic powerhouse.
Israel's main economic partner, trading partner, is Europe.
Okay.
And they have been given special status, and actually just recently were brought into this economic development project, which they may not be allowed to remain in. There is a lot of sentiment about sanctioning Israel now. And I'll tell you, one thing that's really gotten a boost out of this is the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Which has been growing more outside the United States. Also, recently, Elvis Costello, or better known as Costello, but it's Costello in Irish, turned down an invitation, a big gig in Israel, after pressure came from pro-Palestinian activists around the country. Mm-hmm. And Gil Scott-Heron did as well. And the New Jewish Forward reports that while it has not been reported in the mainstream press, many top-flight entertainers have turned down very rich offers to perform in Israel. They just simply say no.
So this is reminiscent of the
South Africa.
Exactly.
Israel is becoming in a pariah state and is galloping in that direction. And the problem is that the Israelis who believe that in their supremacy, that they have total contempt for anybody who is not a Zionist Jew. They have contempt for non-Zionist Jews. Contempt for what they call the goyim.
Right, right.
They are showing this, and this, as they do this, the contempt for Israel and the isolation of Israel will continue. One of the problems, however, is that Israel has 200 to 300 nuclear weapons. And quite likely, these weapons are pointed at the capitals of major states.
Great. So,
and many Israelis over the years, from on the street level to government officials, have said, if anything happens to us, we'll take the world with us.
So, Jeffrey, we're coming to the end of the hour here, or the half hour, and is KZYX archiving yet?
KZUX is not archiving yet, but I have started to archive again on Radio for All.
Okay, so we can catch your show on Radio for All. What and it's called?
It's called Takes on the World.
Takes on the World.
And you just go to my name, Jeff Blankfort.
Also, you write on Counterpunch frequently?
Yes, I do. I've just written a review, speaking of Texas, North Texas State University is a professor named Jeff Warrow, who's just written a book called Quicksand, U.S. Pursuit of Power in the Middle East, America's Pursuit of Power in the Middle East, which I wrote a positive review for. I interviewed him, and he's written the most comprehensive history of the U.S. and the Middle East that I've seen, and he's very mainstream. Except he's found out that one of the real reasons for U.S. problems in the Middle East, going back to the Balfour Declaration, is U.S. support for Israel and the Israel lobby.
Okay, Jeff, thanks for joining us. Jeffrey Blankfort from KZYX, Mendocino, and a frequent contributor to Counterpunch. I met Coburn in Humboldt. He looks just like he writes.
He looks just like he writes.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Scooter, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Daddy was an Arab from Beersheba, a situation so unkind. My mama was a refugee from Ramallah, had to leave her land behind. I grew up in this refugee camp, in this unwelcome land. In this little parcel of Lebanon, we were dealt a losing hand. Then one day the soldiers came, a tired old refrain. I'll try to tell you what happened next, but there's no way to explain. The soldiers raped my mother, then they killed her dead, along with the rest of the Shatila camp, while I hid beneath my bed. Now I'm a wandering, no place to call my home. Palestine, all around the world I roam. My aunt came over from Jordan, brought me there to live. And together we've moved to half the world. Oh, for peace, what I would give. In Beirut, Greece, and New York town, I've watched the world churn. But my home is Palestine. Someday I will return. But I'm a wandering, no place to call my home. Palestine, all around the world I roam. This is my situation here in the heart of the empire. Sent the copters and bulldozers from Ramallah to a funeral pyre. You've heard my story, time will not allow. Soon my visa will expire, what will you do now? 'Cause I'm a wandering, no place to call my home. Palestine, all around the world I roam.
That was David Robix, recorded live at a Unitarian Universalist gig in Houston. We open with a live skit. Special thanks to Stacey Davis and Glenn Urbach. This and all Innerside radio programs are archived on the InnerTubes. Simply Google The Inner Side. My name is Scooter, and I'll see you all next week.